Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio. We are broadcasting live from the Radisson Hotel, and it is to mark a very special health and well-being event taking place in this hotel. And it is being hosted by the Letterkenny Community Health Forum. Right, okay. By the way, just to let you know, you can come down here now. It's up and running now. There's tea, coffee, and all manner of things as well. And there's some talks a little later on. And there's a load of, what is there? There's a load of information stands. So who am I going to speak to, Caroline? Okay, so we're going to speak to Mary Vaughan now. She's going to give us a run through of what's going on, what's not going on. We're going to head into a separate room, actually, which has all of these pop-up stands. Okay, just to get a sense so you know what's going on here. Right. Mary, I didn't even realise this room was here.
I know, we work very silently and efficiently, Greg.
How did you go about getting so many organisations and services represented here?
Well, I suppose it's through the members on the Community Health Forum, and we also have Rory Kavanagh, who's the manager with the Community Health Network. So through us all, we just got all of the services in. We contacted all the community services to ask them to present on the day.
And anyone calling down here, I mean, there's something for everyone here. I know that was said in the preamble, but quite literally there is.
There's something here for everybody. We have blood pressure and diabetes checks over here, and I've noticed a full line of presenters here have already lined up to have their blood pressure and diabetes checked.
But I'm not doing it.
Me neither.
I think when we mentioned blood pressure earlier on, you gave me a look, I gave you a look. So let's call the whole thing off, right? So if people call into the Radisson, as I say, you walk through reception, you come here, this is your first door on the right, just have a wander around, have a chat and see what suits you.
Absolutely. And there's loads of services that you can ask questions. You know, there's something here for everybody. And then next door to this room, we will have the talks going on throughout the day. And we actually now have somebody that is going to come back and talk around exercise at 2 o'clock.
Of course there was someone going to turn up and talk about exercise at 2 o'clock.
Yeah, so that's great. It's good to have that because it's so important for our health and well-being.
For sure. Listen, thanks very much for that, okay? That's Mary Walker Callahan. That was just a wee visit we had into the room where all the information stands are. I mentioned them a little earlier on, and it is quite literally something for everyone, and those of you watching are getting a sense of what's happening out there. Okay, keep your texts and calls and comments coming into us if you don't mind. We are taking your comments on the normal. I'm sorry, I've just sat down. We're taking your comments on the normal contacts. Text WhatsApp 086 60 25000. You can also email comments at highlandradio.com or give us a call on 074 91 25000. The crowds are building here, which is great to see. It's always good to see these things being very well supported. Right, okay. I better get back to some of these comments on the SPHE before we take a break and welcome our next guests on. Well done, Greg, on how you handled that conversation yesterday. It's a very sensitive issue. Your questions and guidance were absolutely necessary to extract the necessary information. Look, none of us, me, politicians, community reps, whatever, we all have to be able to have a conversation to try and get to, you know, a consensus, the right outcome and all that. Greg, how do you justify your statement about a 13-year-old girl being put on the pill without following through with the fact that the child should be reported under safeguarding laws as it's statutory rape? Irrelevant, of course. Why don't inquire what supports or counsellors are available to send that 13-year-old to discuss the impact of sex at a young age? What age is the person the 13-year-old having sex for? Really interesting questions. Questions I actually put through to a GP that actually said that it is they that if there's no lower age limit on someone that would could come forward seeking contraception, they'd be put on the contraception. And if they didn't want their parents contacted, then they wouldn't be contacted. And it's not my fault. I didn't make up the rules. That's what's happening in this country right now. So if you don't like that, I'm afraid you're getting angry at the wrong person. Good morning. What right-thinking parent thinks that book is okay for 13-year-olds? Totally appalled by it. It's paving the way for sexual predators to think that 12 or 13-year-olds think their advances are normal. Or, as I say, are we sure it's not making sure that 12 and 13-year-olds realise that sexual advances aren't normal? Which is it? Or is it both? So they go on to say that some teachers I know have the morals of an alley cat, so no thanks, as well. We will teach our children what a healthy sexual relationship is, and 18, they can decide themselves. But who? For the children in certain types of homes where they maybe aren't cared for as they should be or don't get the feeding that they should be, who's going to look after them? Do we have a moral responsibility to them, or are they collateral damage to our morals? Just a question, not a statement. A caller says it's simply porn, what's in those books. There is a gender and it's called grooming. Another, oh my God, if my 13-year-old went to anyone and told them they were sexually active and they put them on the pill, I'd be furious. That adult who put them on the pill should report it to Garda and a parent. That is illegal. No wonder they're trying to lower the age of consent. Imposing secrecy in class, wow, is that not what groomers do, keeping secrets from parents, when we as parents spend our lives telling kids to always be open and they can tell us anything? That's how abuse is left hidden. In this social discourse where you imply that people want to teach this stuff to kids because they're grooming, if that's what you say the motivation is, you do also have to accept wrongly that others might say that you don't want the children to know so that they can also be groomed and not know what's going on. It's really unhealthy language, and both sides of that argument can make that charge, and it gets us absolutely nowhere and leaves the kids stuck in the middle. We need to people with different views get together, discuss it, and come up with what's right for the children. I can't believe what I'm hearing from Greg. He's coming across as far too woke and trying to be so liberal to the point of total irresponsibility. I don't see myself as that, to be honest with you. I suppose if you challenge conservatism, if I can use it that word, maybe I don't think the natural position is liberalism. But anyway, seems like a charter for the promotion of paedophilia seems to be more about sexual degradation and pleasure than morals, which is, yeah, that I mean, I can see exactly where you're coming from there, because it's not a conversation that would have been having we'd have been having 40 years ago, or even 30 or 20 years ago. All right, it is the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio. Our next guest's coming up, but first let's take a break. Good luck if you're playing the bingo numbers today. Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme, and we are continuing our conversation on the SPHE and some concerns that are there or that aren't there. Annette Horan's education consultant with the National Council for Curriculum. Good morning to you, Annette. Hopefully you can hear me okay.
Yes, good morning, Greg. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. Right, okay. So I suppose, first and foremost, you had a listen, I believe, to Rebecca McDade yesterday, who her views are representative of an awful lot of parents out there. And for many, not Rebecca, because she's incredibly well-researched, but for many, it seems to be a lack of knowledge as to what's being taught in our schools. One of the key things that jumped out yesterday and our listeners picked up on was that there was like 10, 11, 12 books that teachers or the school can select from to teach this type of stuff to our children. Is that the case? And if so, why?
Yes, Greg, that could well be the case. But our role within the NCCA, I work with the National Council for Curriculum and Assessment, and our role is to develop the curriculum. We don't have any role in creating textbooks or indeed even in vetting or approving of textbooks. And I think this is where sometimes the confusion occurs for parents, and understandably so. You know, their child comes home with a textbook in the school bag, and they're looking at it, and they assume that what's in the textbook reflects what's in the curriculum. But this is not always the case. We have a scenario here where the curriculum was developed in a really rigorous and thoughtful manner. It took years to get to this point. We consulted with parents, with students, with teachers, with experts both within and beyond Ireland. The research evidence is there behind it. It took a lot of work to get to the curriculum. But in the meantime, the textbook companies very often went ahead of us and prepared textbooks that either don't reflect the learning outcomes that are set out in the curriculum fully, or sometimes misrepresent the intent that was that's in the curriculum.
Is that not problematic though, Annette, in that, you know, we really should be formulating what we want our children to be taught, and the textbooks should follow that? Because look at you know yourself, then you take a page of a textbook that's not actually going to be taught to children, you stick it on Facebook, you circle a word like anal sex or something along those lines, and my apologies to sensitive ears, and then everyone's up to high dough. We've put the cart before the horse here then.
Well, this has created problems for us, and we, in some ways, we anticipated that teachers needed clear direction. It's not enough to just put the curriculum in the teacher's hands and say to them, here's an updated curriculum now. It's been very carefully developed. Go and use this now in the classroom. They need resources. They need lesson plans. They need guidance. So we developed toolkits for teachers, and anybody, any of your listeners can have a look. They can go Junior Cycle SPHE NCCA Toolkit, Senior Cycle NCCA SPHE Toolkit, or Primary. And there they'll see where we have actually very carefully selected suitable resources for the Irish classroom, suited to the new curriculum, that are age and stage appropriate and freely available. So we're encouraging schools to use those. And really, there is no need to use a textbook in teaching SPHE, because the guidance and the supports that are on the NCCA toolkit provide all of the resources that are needed in the classroom. And teachers can look at those and select from them. But parents can look and see what's happening too in the classroom then, and what's been advised in terms of the resources for the classroom. So that's where we are in relation to the textbooks. And to be honest with you, it's an understandable misunderstanding that has arisen because of the tendency to think that the textbooks represent the curriculum when they don't always do that.
All right, okay, so there's been videos circulating, different videos with different stuff, talking about, you know, children forming genitalia from Play-Doh, secrecy, don't tell your parents, sign this form, porn, be it, you know, graphical, not graphical, be it animated or what have you, being shown to our children, that this is all part of some sort of a grooming plan that everyone must be complicit in. What I mean, I've thrown a lot out there, and at the important bits that you the important bits that you think need to be referenced that are true, not true, what's the story?
Well, the first thing to say is that video totally misrepresents the professional learning that's taking place in the course that's been run in DCU. This is a course that's been offered to teachers who want to upskill in order to be able to more effectively teach the SPHE curriculum back in their schools. And as part of the learning within that course, they would routinely look at resources that have been created in other countries, and they would critically discuss those, and they would be saying, could we use these, would these be suitable in an Irish classroom? And in most instances they would be saying no, and that's the context in which those resources were being used with professional adults. In no way would it have been suggested that these were suited for the Irish curriculum, because at the end of the day, those teachers, the message they're getting through their all of their professional learning, whether it's in DCU or when they go out to professional learning with IDA, which is the professional support service for teachers, they're always being directed back to the curriculum for direction and to the NCCA toolkits, because that's where they're taking their guidance from in relation to what's to be used in the classroom. Come back to your confidentiality one, because this is a really serious one, because in teaching SPHE, again, part of the training and the guidance that's on our toolkits is very clearly saying that the role of parents as partners in all aspects of a child's education is really important. And we are working in the SPHE classroom in partnership with parents. We want students to go back home and to have conversations with their parents about what's happening in the classroom and to discuss the topics. It's not a case of, confidentiality means we don't talk to anybody. The context in which again, it's about taking things completely out of context, and then that this can lead to misunderstanding. Very often in SPHE, teachers would go in and they'd say, because this is a space where we're going to be sharing our opinions about sometimes sensitive and personal matters, there needs to be ground rules here. We need to listen carefully, respectfully. We need to show sensitivity. If somebody says something, well, then you don't talk about it afterwards in the schoolyard. So in that context, there would be a reference to being sensitive to what people are saying in the classroom and not repeating it.
Yeah.
But never would it be said that you don't go home and talk to your parents about what's happening in the classroom. And child safety and child protection guidelines would always be adhered to, so that if a child comes up with something in the classroom that a teacher is in any way concerned about and that needs to be followed up with in relation to child protection, then the teacher would make that known to this child as well.
Okay.
So I think that's really important to say.
Annette, I think there's more than two groups, right? But I'll just, for simplicity of the question, I'll say there's two groups of parents, guardians listening to us right now, okay? There are those who believe their children are mature, They know maybe they're accessing this information somewhere. They want them to get the right information, and they believe the school is the right place to do so. And they're comfortable with children 13, 14, 15 years of age being taught what we're discussing right now. Then you have other parents who raise their children in a different way. Perhaps they don't want this information in their child's head. They believe that they're the best people, really, to guide their children in this regard, and are very upset by it. So I don't think we could ever decide, we could ever devise a curriculum that would please both sets, as I've outlined them there. So what powers do parents have to ensure that if they don't want their children accessing this type of information, that they're not accessing this type of information? Because that really, I think, is what it boils down to. We're never going to get a curriculum for all.
Okay, Greg, very good questions there. Well, the first statement, I suppose, I need to make sure everybody hears is the fact that parents do have a right to withdraw their child from any lesson, you know, not just SPHE, but any part of the curriculum that they feel goes against their conscience or their beliefs. In the case of SPHE, though, it is important also to say that we went up and down the country. We met with parents, literally in Donegal, close to probably where you are there today, and in Kerry and everywhere in between. And we showed them the curriculum. And when they saw what was in it, they could see how beneficial it was for their students and for their children. And in many cases, they said, this isn't going far enough. And everything that was here that, you know, they felt was needed. And when parents actually look at what's in the curriculum, as opposed to what they are hearing is in the curriculum or might be in a textbook, there are very few instances where parents feel the need to withdraw their children from the SPHE classroom. Because you have to realise this is a really broad curriculum. It's responding to the concerns of parents. Parents are concerned when they hear that, for example, there's rising levels of anxiety and depression among young people, lowering of self-esteem. And that's all coming through to us in the surveys every day. We hear that 80% of 12 to 17 year olds have disclosed being subjected to some form of sexual harassment within their peer group in the last 12 months. So parents know all of this, and they want and need a curriculum that's responding to the lives.
But we also have to be careful too, Annette. We also have to be careful too, because, you know, I'm not saying there's a correlation, but whilst we are giving more information, using different terms, being slightly more advanced, I think, with teenagers in these age groups, we are also seeing a dramatic increase in the type of sexual assault, inappropriate behavior amongst peers. You know what I mean? 13-year-olds on 13-year-olds, 15-year-olds on 15-year-olds. So do we have to make sure that what we're doing is right, that we're not in some way we are encouraging it? That's, I'm not saying we are, but we just have to be really careful. And that's my whole purpose for having this conversation, because we're not seeing a reduction in peer abuse that perhaps we should see.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, in the sense that we have to do it in a manner that's helpful for young people, and that isn't going to exacerbate problems. And that's why the resources, I keep coming back to them, that have been developed with the expertise of people in the, for example, in the HSE, working together with us in the NCCA and the Department of Education, they're so carefully framed to ensure that we're giving young people the information they need, the skills they need to be able to manage and navigate all of the many, not all, but many of the tricky situations that they're going to encounter. And upskilling them, not just for now, but for life beyond school as well. If that's not done in a careful manner, you're right. Yeah. But then the other side of the argument is to say, don't do it at all. And then where are they getting their information? Where are they getting building their skills?
Okay.
Where are they even being challenged to think about social norms?
But just to get down to it, and sorry, Annette, if at the end of the day, I'll just go back to my point. We're not going to get an SPHE for all, I don't think. You're saying parents have the right to, like, I would think if I had a children still at this age group, there's certain things I would like them not to hear in class. You're saying parents firstly can access the SPHE and also can remove their children from these classes if they don't believe it appropriate to the age of their child.
Well, the other factor to consider here is teachers as well. You know, they have a really important role here because they know the students in front of them and their stage and age and their stage of readiness for the material. So it's, this is not a one size fits all curriculum. It's not prescribed in first year you have to teach this and second year you have to teach that. It's all about, it's a curriculum that lays out the learning that typically would be taught across first, second and third year. And by the time a child gets to third year and is moving on to transition year or beyond, then they will have encountered this learning. But the teacher has a role to play in saying, well, where are my students at now? And are they ready for this particular?
Yeah, but that's, I mean, can you do that amongst a class of 28? But I take your point.
Yeah,
finally, what's the...
They do that. They do that all the time.
Okay, that's fine. What's the relationship between the WHO guidance, which some of it's absolutely disgraceful, I think, and what actually is taught or ends up being taught in Irish schools?
There's absolutely no link whatsoever between the WHO guidelines and the NCCS BHE curriculum. It has had no influence over the curriculum. It is not referred to in the curriculum. And that's just another very dubious link that has been put out there to, I suppose, discredit the work that's been done in the new curriculum. But that's a complete... stray.
Okay.
Red herring.
All right. Listen, thanks for your time. I do appreciate it in coming back to us. Take care of yourself. That was Annette Horan there, who's education consultant with National Council for Curriculum, the SPHE, and she was responding to. Listen, it's not going to, that's not going to appease an awful lot of people. But the bottom line is that if we adults can't discuss this stuff. Without people being accused of being one thing or another, there's no hope for the children. A caller says, there's an interesting one here. Yeah, it's interesting that Annette is given the time and space to talk by Greg, but you interrupted Rebecca every time she spoke yesterday. I didn't listen back to the conversation. I only wanted to keep the conversation on what was actually being taught in the schools. That was it. And there was a point where it turned into a class for me. What do you see? What's that? What's the other? You know what I mean? It was not like Rebecca's a regular on our show. She's also been given the space on the program to talk about what she wants to talk about. You know, she wasn't on Morning Ireland. She wasn't on the Pat Kenny show. She wasn't on Liveline. You know, she wasn't on Drive Time. She was on your local radio show, expressing her points of view, a very strong woman that has her own platforms as well, well capable of engaging in conversation with me. So it's not like it wasn't platformed. Loads of other comments coming in on that too, frequently for me to just keep a track on at the moment, but I'll get back to that. So that's what coming in from Annette Horan there. Some of the questions answered, some aren't. Ultimately, and I think the only resolution to this really is that, and as I say, the stuff I'd pull my kids out of is that parents find out what's being taught in the schools, and if they don't believe it's age appropriate, they take their kids out of those classes, because there are other kids in those classes that need that information because they're vulnerable. They're not getting it at home, and they could be vulnerable at home as well. I can't square that circle, and it's a horrible conversation to have because it's so emotive and really quite controversial. I don't mind getting abuse. I'm only here trying to make sure that we all make the right decisions, whatever they are. We don't want to go too far, and we don't want to go back, do we? Where in the middle is the right thing? So hopefully we can have polite discourse in regards to that. Maybe the style of the conversation yesterday was a bit edgy with Rebecca, maybe, but Rebecca knows I have an awful lot of respect for her, and I just wanted to stay on track of what's being taught in the schools. But anyway, we can revisit that again, and trust me, we only have our children's best interests at heart here. All of us the exact same. 086 60 25000, WhatsApp and texts to that number. Give us a call in 07491 25000. It is the 9 till noon show. Do you know what? We're live. We're not in studio. We're live from the Radisson Hotel. Half live, some of us anyway. From the Radisson Hotel here. Thanks to Paul and his crew for keeping us so well, for hosting us so well. And what's happening here at the moment is a health and wellbeing event in the Radisson. It's being hosted by the Letterkenny Community Health Forum. There's dozens of agencies here, Older People's Council. There's information on Springboard from toddlers to oldies. There's pop-up stands for everyone here. There's some talks beginning at 11 here as well. Smoking, boozing, mental health, exercise, physical health. And it's all free and open for you to come down. There's plenty of parking. Come in and say hello. Rhett, I have to take a break. And we are going to be back with our next guests on the 9 till noon show very, very shortly. Stay right where you are. Okay, welcome back to the Radisson Hotel. We are in our studio here with Patsy Ferry, Family Support Admin with the Local Youth and Family Services. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. Nice and close to the mic. You're doing fantastic. Let's keep it up. And also we're joined by Tierna Diamond, a social prescriber in Letterkenny and surrounding areas. Hi.
Hi, how's it going, Greg?
I'm doing good. I'll start with you, Trina, firstly. What's a social prescriber?
So social prescribing is about supporting people, people's health and well-being through community-based activities such as gardening, art, exercise Lovely. Groups. As you said, I cover Letterkenny and the surrounding areas, but there's six other social prescribers that cover Donegal. So it's quite popular in this area.
And it's across the age groups, isn't it?
It's over 18s, yeah. It's a free service open to adults, so you can be referred by your GP, mental health team, any really professional. Also, you can do a self-referral or a family referral. What happens then is, if I get a referral and I make contact with the person and we arrange a meeting then, one-to-one, just to kind of discuss social prescribing, maybe how it might benefit them.
Yeah.
So every kind of social prescribing plan is individual to that person.
Yeah, of course, and there's no typical answer to this question,
no.
Right? But if someone, you have face-to-face with someone and they present a certain way, you know, what kind of conversation might you have with them in terms of engaging in some of these activities?
A lot of people that come to me, they're kind of, you know, they're lacking in confidence, they're feeling lonely, they're isolated. They want to, you know, get that connection back within the community, build friendships, you know, learn new hobbies. So it's all about that. So I would like, you know, to discuss with them what it is that they're interested in and then help them, you know, reach, you know, groups or maybe counselling or... and as well, lives. We have different groups. We have a walking group. We have the ladies knitting and crochet group. We have a health and social cafe on the Wednesday evening. So these are all free groups open to adults. And it's just really, really nice social groups about bringing people together, you know, and having tea, coffee, chat, and just building friendships and connections.
And I think, like a lot of these services, I think one of the things is the first step, isn't it? It's the first contact. That's the... It's almost the gap between how people feel and when they reach out to people like you, because there are lots of services out there. We just, and this is what I see our role as well, is linking the people that need the services to the great services that are there.
Absolutely, yeah. It's just about getting that, you know, days like this is so important. You're sharing kind of the services that's out there and you're reaching out to people and letting them know what is in the area. So many people come to me and they don't know what's on, you know, the great resources that we have. So that's what it's all about, sharing that information and, you know, letting people know that there is help and supports.
As you know, we broadcast right across the Northwest. I mean, at this time, it is I know your responsibility is Letterkenny and surrounding areas, but are these types of services available in Dunluce or are they available in Carndonagh?
They are, actually, yeah. So we have... There's another six social prescribers, so across Donegal is covered, so it's great.
Yeah,
really, really good service.
Okay, Patsy, what's your role in all of this? Where do you begin?
where I end? I've been working for Life for nearly 24 years now. We started off in Glenwood Estate. We were Glenwood Youth Project, and then we branched out to the greater Letterkenny area, and now we've extended out. We're a local youth and family service now. We're a service that we do a lot of things. We work on the needs of the people rather than we deciding what we'll do. If someone presents themselves with an issue, we will react and work with them.
You've been at it a long time. What changes have you seen?
I suppose the breakdown of the family has been the biggest issue. A lot of children are facing huge issues that they didn't, when we originally started, when we look back, a lot of the issues were very innocent. Now there's a lot of drugs, alcohol,
And what, from what ages are we talking?
Well, you're probably talking from birth upwards. Yeah. We work with all ages, and obviously the new communities have presented issues as well, and we're working quite a lot now with the new communities, but we're still working with the local community. Yeah. They're still our kind of core people.
Bread and butter, yeah. And in terms of maybe older generations, you know, society has changed really quite significantly in terms of the opportunities we have to interact with each other. And we heard Cherna talking about you know, loneliness and isolation. We're in a very different world now that kind of feels sometimes like it's leaving certain groups behind.
Without a doubt, older people are suffering huge isolation, especially in the social media era where everything is done through social media. A lot of people don't have the resources to, you know, they didn't come up through the system of, you know, turning on a PC or turning on a laptop and knowing exactly what to do. A lot of older people would have presented with those issues to us through the years, especially in the last 10 years, where they don't, they might want to book flights. They don't even know where to start.
I'd say too much, or even book a football ticket to go and see a game. And that stuff we have a control over. You know, I don't get me started. I'm already in enough trouble.
The program is not long enough for me to talk about that.
And it's just the complexity of the cases as well, and the groups and the age categories that have been drawn into the services now.
Yeah, we work with a lot of groups, and that's really helpful. And through the groups, we meet other people who needs help or support or whatever. Gary, our boss, would be running around working with groups all over Letterkenny and beyond. And especially with the new communities now, trying to bring them in to society and get them, you know, mainstream.
Yeah, because a lot of the responsibility of that falls on organisations or groups like yourself.
Yeah.
Tierna, you talked about sort of self-referral or GP referrals. Do GP referrals happen that often? I've not really come across it, right? So there is a sense that maybe you go into your GP and you describe what you are. They say, what is the cognitive behavioral therapy, or here's some low dose antidepressants and away you go, right? I'm not saying that's what happens, right? But sometimes you feel that that's maybe what happened. Are people being sent to your services to look at different ways of overcoming life's problems as they should be?
I'm in the role now almost 2 years, so definitely from now, from when I started, there is a lot more GP referrals, thankfully. I know the HSE did do a push on social prescribing and trying to get health professionals, you know, to buy into it and to use it. So definitely now I've noticed in the last, this year especially, there has been an increase in that. So thankfully it's getting the message out there, you know, that there is alternatives as well.
So how do people get in touch?
People will, if the GP or another health professional refer them out.
I would say too as well, by the way, it's very important that we go into our it depends on your state of well-being. People need to advocate more for themselves in the GP's office as well. GPs are fantastic, but they're general practitioners, right? And whether it's a physical or emotional or mental issue, I think we have to go in and advocate, say, listen, I'm not feeling great at the moment. I need some support. But I heard this lovely lady, Patsy, on the radio, right? And I would like to, you know, maybe engage with her and her colleague. You know, we have to advocate for ourselves as well. We have to take a bit of personal responsibility where we can.
Absolutely, yeah. I suppose we're all in charge, you know, of our well-being and our recovery. So if a GP or another health professional would make the referral, I give the person a call and we arrange a meeting then face-to-face. You know, sometimes, you know, people might not turn up because obviously the initial meeting is sometimes daunting for people, but I find when they do make that first approach, you know, it's relaxed and it's comfortable, and they, you know, they settle in, and thank goodness they keep coming back again. So that's a good sign.
It's amazing, with so many services, so many people, either literally or metaphorically, get to the front door and have the hand on the handle and then turn.
Absolutely.
Turn the handle and come on in, because people like Patsy, people like Tierna, this is their role. What they want to do is to help people as much as possible. All right, both of you, thanks so much. Been lovely meeting you. Problem. Patsy, you look like you want to say something.
No, I'm not. Well, I was just going to say our door
is open. See, I'm good.
Go
on.
Our door is always open and there's always a cup of tea there.
Exactly.
Always. Absolutely.
It's very comfortable, it's very welcoming, and it's not daunting.
No, and it is the community helping the community. You never know. Everyone might need a hand at some point.
And it could be just for 5 minutes, or it could be your repeat visits, but it's there for everybody.
Exactly. Yeah.
And we also have an after school who has vacancies at this precise
spaces
moment.
For children.
Spaces, yeah, okay. Spaces for
in
children.
In where?
In Lifes on New Lyme Road. So there's a few
too far for me. All right then.
That's great. Thank you.
No, we don't take. We don't 5 to 15.
I know. I'm joking. Okay. So that's actually really quite useful information. Again, how would a parent, guardian, get info on that?
Just they call in or they can phone us, and we'll do the rest.
It's been lovely chatting to you, Patsy. Thank you so very much indeed. And thanks for your many years of great community service. It's actually a great typical. You won't take a bit of praise, but you deserve it, right?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that. And you're beginning yours as well, 2 years in. You've earned your stripes. All right, then. Patsy Ferry, fair play to you. Family support admin with Lifes, LYFS. And also we had Tierna Diamond, who's a social prescriber in Letterkenny and surrounding areas. Again, what today is about is letting you out there know that there are services and there are amazing people that are there to help. If you just reach out, that's what they want you to do. Okay, we'll be back with more of the 9 till noon show live here from the Radisson after the break. Greg, it's time for an open debate on the service providers involved in the SPHE. Do other counties have the same issues with it, or is it just Donegal people? It pops up right across the country. Greg, yes, I appreciate that you had the lady on yesterday. You're 100% right. No other station will touch it. I said that yesterday to people, so that itself shows that the payment given to most radio stations has an effect on what is covered. They will not go against their paymasters. Again, that's false information propagated by some. In fact, I know precisely the Twitter accounts that person follows. Greg, an important lesson for all to learn here is to log off and stop believing everything they see on Facebook and YouTube. The internet's full of grifters trying to make a quick buck on fake outrage generation. The sexual assault on our kids' minds in the classroom only leads to coarse playground language. Children develop at different ages, and there's plenty that parents are happy with some information, but it also depends on the size of the school classroom in different areas. But if you don't like what's being taught to your children, find out, get them out of that class. It amazes me that the type of parents that believe their children need this information don't pass it on themselves. Why would you want outsiders discussing this with your children? The homes that neglect their children don't care anyway, but they need to be cared for in a more appropriate way. On these travels up and down the country, you meet parents. Did you show them the 9 to 10 books from each year to choose from? And on it goes. Right. Olivia Kelly, clinical nurse manager at the of the inpatient unit at Donegal Hospice. Good morning to you.
How are you?
I am great. Great to have you on the show. Mary Collins, Assistant Director of Community Palliative Care in Donegal Hospice. Good morning.
Morning, Greg.
I'll start with you, Olivia. Why is it important for you to turn up here?
I suppose it's more public awareness of what we do in the hospice, information about the hospice as a whole and the palliative care services that we provide. I think a lot of people in the public have a preconceived idea of what the hospice is, what the hospice means, what palliative care means. We see that so many times with our patients. They come into the hospice petrified and they're there for maybe an hour and they're saying, my goodness, this is completely different to what I thought it was going to be. So many people come into us, get their symptoms managed, stay for a week, 10 days, go back home again. I think a lot of people think that the hospice is just for end-of-life care. People come in and they never go back out again. So I suppose today is really important for us to get that across, that it's not just end-of-life. It's for patients with symptoms that needs managed that we can look after, and we have patients that come in and out multiple times throughout their illness.
I think Donegal Hospice is it's an incredibly important service that many people engage in, but I think it's one of those services that if you're listening now and you've never had a reason to engage with the Donegal Hospice, that you hear it and you hear Donegal Hospital, Donegal, but you, it doesn't land with you necessarily.
Yeah.
And I think that's where sort of some of the misconceptions come. But as soon as then you are engaging with it, then the penny drops and you understand and these conversations make sense. Yeah. So that's why we have them, to increase awareness and what have you. And also, Mary, you know, palliative care for some, and Olivia touched on this, is, you know, what people might think it's the last 3 weeks of your life or something, but it's much more than that. And palliative care is not necessarily too scary words either, you know. It's good that we get to understand what they are and what they mean.
Palliative care is really about living with the best quality and dignity, and for the person to have a good, normal life as much as possible. In the community, our aim and focus is keep the patient at home. That's what home care is about, and that's where most of our patients would like to
they
be cared
to be
for.
Home, yeah.
Yeah. But unfortunately, due to circumstances and families and due to complex issues with each individual, the hospice then is offered where they can get the expertise with our consultants and medical team.
And all the while too, looking to improve service, develop the hospital, hospice itself. A lot of work done with children as well through the hospice. Another thing that maybe people don't necessarily realise. Olivia, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, so I suppose the hospice itself, the inpatient unit, it's over 18s only, but in the community, they're involved heavily with any children in the community. The hospice charity itself provides services to children in the community. And there's also Helen McDade is a clinical nurse specialist for children with life-limiting illnesses in the community. So even though the inpatient unit itself doesn't look after kids with life-limiting illnesses, the palliative care services as a whole is very much involved, and there are a huge number of children in Ireland, but especially Donegal, that do require those services.
You know, and obviously, often we think of it, and it's an important element of it too, of course, is the physical care, but in palliative care as well, there's an awful lot, Mary, for people to process emotionally as well, and your team are incredibly experienced in this regard.
There's more than the physical pain. In fact, emotional pain and psychological would be very complex out in the community. Again, it's engaging with all the multidisciplinary teams that are in the community. We're just not alone out there. The GP is the main person. We're an advisory to the GP, and we can invite in all the different disciplines in the community to help the patient. Again, the patient's the centre of care, and we just use all the links to give them the wholeness of the person. We just don't look at where the illness is. We look at the individual as a whole, but we don't forget the family. The family is also a huge, important part of our delivery of care.
Yeah, and I think most people who've engaged with it or have a loved one know that, and that's why so much money is raised by people who've availed of the services adjacent or directly. Olivia Kelly, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Lovely to speak to you. And people can call down and chat to Olivia and Mary today. Mary Collins, thank you so very much
indeed.
You're
more than welcome.
Take care of yourself. That is just one of the pop-ups that are here from the Donegal Hospice. Okay, we'll be back with the news headlines after a quick break.